Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good yawning this morning. It is Wednesday, the 2nd of June, 2021. You're tuned into 96.9 FM Guardian Radio, which means you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Today's show is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue. I have a brief message from the Bahamas Customs Department. Exempt, making customs simple. Bahamas Customs Baggage Declaration app is coming soon. Fill out customs forms while traveling. Search for rates of duty, calculate duty before you land, and so much more. This app is easy to use and helps you clear customs even faster. Again, this message is brought to you by the Bahamas Customs Department. Good morning. It is June the 2nd, which means today is the post-debate wrap-up show for the second national political debate in the debate series hosted by the University of the Bahamas and Verizon Media Group. My guest in studio today is Mr. Cecil Newry.
Good morning this morning.
Good morning this morning.
But I was supposed to say yawning, right?
No, at least you didn't say good morning yesterday morning or tomorrow morning.
Yes.
Yeah, you focus on today.
That's good.
And my guest on Zoom this morning is Dr. Chris Curry. Good morning, Dr. Curry.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Absolutely. It is good to have you. Just before we get into the discussion about the debate, the post-debate wrap-up, I was looking at the newspaper and I saw the pamphlet, the annual budget 2021-2022. It's called A Plan for Growth, Accelerated Bahamas Recovery Plan. And I just want to say to the FNM, Good play. While these other boy them was debating, you put together this document. I could be honest with you, picking this up this morning was just like you were at the debate, except you didn't show up and give us any of this information that you could have because you had it. But it's great. So if you get an opportunity today, pick up the paper, pick up the Guardian, grab a copy and take a look at it. There's lots of important information in it. It is like the budget in a snapshot, a glassy snapshot. It's easy to read, and this is what I'm going to be spending my holiday weekend reading as I eat plum and watch people teeth mango from the side of my yard. It is going to be a wonderful weekend, Cecil. But also in the news, Wells' new magic number. That is the headline on the Tribune. And the headline in The Guardian is 120,000 must get vaccine for herd immunity. LOI, I'm not sure why Wells is predicting anything when he's not an actual doctor.
But he's give that caveat when he speaks that he is not an actual doctor. But in his personal opinion, this is his personal opinion that he's given.
Yeah, but that's not what we pay him for. We don't pay him for his personal opinion.
You want his medical opinion?
No.
Which opinion do you want?
I don't want any opinion.
You don't want no opinion?
Not his. I'd like policy. I'd like him to explain policy developed by the cabinet. using the technical staff available to them.
But I'm sure he did that. He is the spokesman for the official policy of this administration regarding health care in the Bahamas.
Yeah, I mean, like, I get
so
that.
So when he spoke, when the good minister spoke, and he gave that statistic and that actual number, that came from somewhere of fact. And you, as a layperson, I am concerned that you would challenge his number. If he says 120,000 shots needed, persons needed, it's 120,000 and that's all I want to hear. And I am hurt that you would go and challenge him, especially on air. So take it back and apologize.
You're upset that I'm upset.
Yes.
I don't know. I just find it problematic that you would get up and say, that's my number. We don't want your number. We want the information from the technical staff. We don't want politics. We want governance. I mean, I still don't understand why I would have to apologize. LOI?
Yes, you.
Would have to apologize.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I'm just very concerned, though. Also, I'm concerned about the science. The minister should not be talking about the science, and certainly not in this way. Because initially, it seems as if we only need 120,000 people to be vaccinated and we will achieve herd immunity.
We'll be straight.
But when you delve deeper into the story, it appears as if 120,000 vaccinated people in combination with people who have already had the virus.
The X number.
Right.
The unknown.
Because the people who have already had the virus will have developed a degree of natural immunity.
Some kind of antibodies.
Right. So it's not just the 120,000 alone. Mm-hmm. It's the 120,000 vaccinated people along with
the X number.
The X number, the unknown number of people that would have developed some degree of natural immunity that will take us to herd immunity. But this is problematic when you're a minister and not technical staff talking about technical things. Because then you lead to the Tribune to making jokes on you and saying things like, well, this new magic number.
I like jokes.
I like jokes too, but not coming from my Ministry of Health in the COVID pandemic. Like, this is when I want the politics. Like, I don't know if you caught the show yesterday. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I realized that I want to be Andy Rooney. I want to be the curmudgeon.
Yes.
I want to be the miserable person in the room that keeps pointing out the problem over and over and over again.
You want to be the Christian consul?
No, I don't. No, we went far left there.
You described the same group.
No, because that's not the same group.
No.
No, the Christian Council is a political lobby organization. Oh, okay.
I just got jokes from them too.
Right. I mean, but jokes all around. But their job is to lobby for the inclusion of Christian doctrine in government policy.
Praise God.
Right. It's not necessarily to engage action plans or campaigns to deconstruct, to challenge social issues. That's not necessarily what their job is.
Okay.
Their job is to be in constant communication with the government to attempt to have Christian doctrine entrenched in policy.
They're doing a good job at that.
You think so?
Well, we're talking about them now.
But that's still not the same thing.
No?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's sort of like us talking about them is sort of like entrenching them in social policy.
Mm-hmm.
But they ain't doing a good job at that either.
They're affecting the culture.
No, they're not. I don't think they're doing that either.
No?
No.
We need to reevaluate objective is.
If they were affecting a culture, right? If we had a culture of parents kicking out children or abandoning children, say for whatever reason, but in particular because they're gay.
The Christian Council is gay?
No, the children who are getting kicked out.
From the school.
From home.
From whom?
Because they're gay. Then, if the council was focused on issues, they would be creating housing programs and temporary housing programs and youth oversight programs for young people that are in that gray area, right? Between having to be at home and being an adult. Like, that's what they would do.
That's deep.
If they were really sort of focused on the issue, they would, like the issue of young ladies being preyed on and young men, because you know what? We do have same-sex predation in this country, where older women prey on young girls and older men prey on young boys. But if the Christian Council were really focused on issues, they would set up community patrols near schools to prevent predation of young children by ensuring that predators who spend their afternoons trolling high schools and primary schools for minors can see the community is standing as a barrier in between them and these children. They would do like in Japan, where in Japan, children walk all over the place unescorted to and from school because routes, community routes are clearly delineated and community members volunteer to be watchdogs in the community. So children follow the route and the older people in the community are just present and mindful in case children need them. Right? Like I could see the Christian Council doing something like that in our communities that are proliferated with bars and web shops and car washes near the school, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think they really just focused on entrenching Christian doctrine in policy. Mm. And I would even recommend to them that if that's what your aim is, try something different, because our government is not necessarily very good at following policy. And that was a bit of a jump at developing policy, at describing it, at ensuring that everybody understands what it means. Like when we have a policy that corporal punishment is not allowed in residential care facilities, we don't have a minister that's bumbling over himself trying to explain about how they're now prepared to re-examine the policy. No, the policy is clear. You're not allowed to beat children.
Should not leverage.
No, and you should not leverage your authority over children to try and explain why you should get away with beating them when you know the law says that you can't beat them.
And not wanting to change the topic, because this is something that needs to be discussed. And hopefully in the future, the Christian Council will engage you just to talk about ideas on how they can help the Bahamas in general instead of just being a doctrine pusher. You know, so but I know we want to talk about the debate, and we have Chris Curry on.
Yeah, we're going to.
Because I want you to stick on this, and I'm afraid of being that person who let you come off topic.
No, I understand what you're saying. We definitely get into the debate, right? Mm-hmm. Without a doubt, because I got some things I have to say. First of all, I'm gonna be a snitch today, right? I need you all to know I snitching today. I snitching on Lincoln Bain. Mm-hmm. And I want to know, Lincoln Bain, how you could get up on a debate stage and snitch on the other debaters in the middle of the debate.
I like Lincoln.
You like that type of thinking?
Yes, I liked it. I enjoyed that part and say, you go, Mr. Bain, you go.
No, man.
No?
Anyway, I got to get into the debate. I just wanted to touch on a couple of these things because, you know, it's almost as if the FNM wasted a wonderful opportunity to share their new ideas, to share the voices of their new candidates, right? But to engage some of the good things that they actually did during the pandemic, right? Some of the good things that actually occurred in the post-Dorian recovery and response, right? Like they missed out on this wonderful opportunity to do that. And instead, they spend their time making nonsensical statements to the public in the media. And I just wanted to touch on that a little bit. I also wanted to remind the Honorable Minister of Works, Desmond Bannister, I need you to know that I have not forgotten you because, you know, we have a relationship now. Until you resign, which is a decent thing to do, or someone demands your resignation. But I see that you're in the paper talking about demolishing more buildings, and I just wanted to remind you that you are also responsible for those people. I don't understand why you think You can allow people to call you the deputy prime minister of a country, but you could get up and say that there are things and people that you are not responsible for in this country. And of all things that you try to rid yourself of responsibility for, it is perhaps one of the most important things, the care of and for vulnerable people. Right? That's what your job is, sir. That's what everybody's job is. That's why y'all are getting paid. That's why every time I jump up and say, is it time for politicians to consider a pay cut in the midst of the pandemic, right? And people slam me down and say, no, this is ridiculous, Aaron. These people are governing our country and ensuring the development and the forward movement of our country. But you can't get your full paycheck if you don't think you have to do the entire job. It's as simple as that. So whether it's gay people, vulnerable people, whether it's migrants, whether it's Haitian people, whether it's Bahamians of Haitian descent, whether it's little stateless Bahamians because you refuse to acknowledge their right to be registered as Bahamians when they hit the age of 18, because you refuse to acknowledge their right to even challenge your perception of the law in court, all of that is your responsibility. All of the young women who are on the family islands trying to figure out how they're going to afford feminine hygiene products in the near future because their cost on the family island is already double our cost in New Providence, that's your responsibility too. All of it is your responsibility. While I getting up here every day trying to mind my P's and Q's and be an adult and be responsible and moderate my speech, it's almost like I'm taking on more responsibility than you taking on. And as you listen to your fellow ministers, including the Minister of Tourism, admonishing all of us to do whatever is necessary to protect the precious tourism bubble that so many of us don't actually get to participate in, you want us to protect a bubble that you are currently designing us out of. Right now, as you making spaces less likely to be accessed by the average Bahamian, you admonishing us to behave and carry on a certain way to protect the tourism industry. But what about the people? You're putting the cart before the horse. Trying to shame people into taking vaccines that aren't even in country. You can't even guarantee you could put your hands on. You lost the respect, and the trust, and the connection of all of these people who want somebody to lead them, who want somebody to help them take on the burden of navigating this complicated world. All of that is your responsibility too, Mr. Deputy Prime Minister. But you took that on by yourself because the Constitution didn't even create that position. You volunteer for that. So now that you volunteered for it, just know that we are looking to you with expectation. And let me tell you, I got to go right now. Let me tell you my expectation dead quick. My expectation of myself and of others is larger than your BPL bill. It's larger than Atlantis' BPL bill. It's when Bay in the paper here today, it's larger than his lawyer bill, accumulated lawyer bills. My expectations of myself and of others is super huge. And it's not about achievement, you know. I don't expect you to achieve grand things. I expect you to put in the effort of being a decent human being. That's it. That's all we could expect. And I expect that from you. Most of all, dear Mr. Desmond Bannister, I expect it from you. We all do. In case you didn't know it, everybody in this country is trusting the FNM because you are at the table. take that seriously, because we do. Anyway, it's time for the debate. Post-show wrap-up. So when we come back from this break, we're going to bring on Dr. Chris Curry and Mr. C.A. Newry, and I'm going to ask them, am I wrong in my assessment of the second national political debate? We will be right back after this break. Please stay tuned to 96.9 FM.
I've been representing all my life. I'm getting ready to make it count this time. Since it's 2021 for your family line, you better get ready. It's about that time. So tell mama to be ready. Tell it to the whole family. The rock the 242. The count depends on you. So tell Teddy, go tell below. Mark it down on your calendar. Since it's 2021, this one's for everyone.
Signs that you should go to therapy. You've thought about it. You wonder if it could help. You want to go. You wanted to see if this list would apply to you. Mental is health too.
This Mental Health Awareness Month message brought to you by Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You are on the clock with Erin Green, and today we are talking the second national political debate wrap-up with Dr. Chris Curry and Mr. C.A. Newry. Good morning, Dr. Curry.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing great. A little tired, but I'm doing great.
Absolutely. You're tired. That was a whole lot of wrangling of people and voices and ideas last night.
Absolutely, but that's what we're here to do.
Yes, indeed. And I'm going to say this, no matter how I feel or felt about the debate, no matter what critique I put out here today, I think that this particular debate series and all debates are necessary for a functioning society.
Absolutely.
On that note, tell me, how do you think the debate went compared to the first debate?
Yeah, that's a great start. I think that this debate showed that parties were a little bit more serious in planning and preparing for the debate. I found that more of the debaters spoke specifically to their party's agenda and policy. Mm-hmm. I felt that you had persons who came with some interesting ideas, and it was clear, and this is one of the things that debates do, that you're able to differentiate between party A and party B and party C. And so we're able to see the differences amongst the six parties that were represented last night. And I thought for the most part, they stayed on task. They stayed in their lane. They answered the questions directly, which was a complaint I had heard about the first debate, that debaters didn't always answer the questions directly. Now, there was some interesting points in the debate. I think you could still see that our people, when I say people, I'm using it generically here, are still not yet at the level we want to see in terms of rigorous debating, right? Yeah. So we still had people making some personal attacks or grandstanding in some of the things they were saying. We had to do some fact-checking. We're going to be doing this for all four debates, but some required more fact-checking than others. So, you know, what I see this is, as we move through the debate series, we're going to make some tweaking and changes. I will add one last thing, Erin. I did see there was a lot of reading from some debaters.
Yes.
And I know you kind of already made your comment on this, but I'll just the idea that the debate committee is always going to be looking at each debate when we do our postmortem and see where we can improve. And perhaps we'll put stronger language in our guidelines that we revise regarding reading speeches. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we want our debaters to be able to speak eloquently, yes, but it's not just how you speak, it's what you deliver. And when you're reading off a piece of paper, It takes away from the real dynamic and drama associated with the debate.
Right, absolutely. So this is a good point to sort of ask this question. A number of people are just, they've given up on debates. They don't see them as a useful measure of, a politician's capacity. They don't see it as a useful tool in the political process in country. And I say, well, first of all, it doesn't matter how poorly a debate goes off. It doesn't matter how poorly the debaters come to the table. There's always something to learn, right? So a lot of people felt like the debate was a waste of time, but I learned a ton of information from watching the debaters, watching when they spoke, when they didn't speak, right? Mm-hmm. I learned a lot from the answers they gave and the things that they didn't say, more importantly. Mm-hmm. Could we talk about, again, why debates are necessary or why they're useful for voters to make assessments?
Well, the thing is, we're almost 50 years in as an independent country, and we have not had the kind of mature political culture where we actually discuss policy, where we actually discuss platform, where we actually discuss the technical issues involved in particular issues. What we have had for many, many years are rallies. And rallies are loud music, adult beverages, paraphernalia, and emotive preaching. That's what it amounts to. Mm-hmm. And so you don't ever discuss critical issues of national importance. But we do now have that forum with the debate. Now, you know, I could lead the horse to water, but I can't make the horse drink. So I can't control what the debaters actually say. I can set the parameters and the guidelines, which we do. But what we're trying to do is nudge our politicians and our parties forward to be more crystallized in their thinking and more decisive and specific in how they deliver what they're going to say to people, because people are now watching. And so we're putting their feet to the fire in the debate system. And we're trying to get them to enunciate as best they can what it is that their party believes as it relates to a particular issue. And so I see that as the real merit, the real value in the debate series.
Right. Absolutely. So for one thing, for me, the first question was about Hurricane Dorian. And it was, what's your party's plan to shore up the country's response or hurricane strategy and citizens' resilience? And I sort of paraphrasing that question, right? Mm-hmm. And from the responses to those questions, this is what I got from all the parties, right? That everybody is thinking about hurricane strategies and what their hurricane plan would look like on paper. Mm-hmm. But nobody seems to have considered the human side of the entire dynamic, right? Like nobody's considered what it was required to shift the culture of the people to get them to understand they need to operate differently with hurricanes. There was no social science element involved, right? So I could tell from each party that while they are focusing on policy, they're not really focusing on the energy necessary and the strategies necessary to engage people.
Yeah, I agree and I concur. And as a social scientist myself, I think the huge thing that we got out of Dorian particularly was the displacement of human beings, being displaced from a community, being moved to another place, having to find your way back to the community that you resided in, the domicile that you came out of, and all of the human rights issues that are associated with that.
Right.
Or even talking about, you know, mandatory evacuation, something that we haven't considered because we're an island state, we're an archipelago. Mm-hmm. But surely there needs to be conversations about that. And then talking about food access to basic things like water and housing. All of these things are part of the human dimension associated with climate resiliency, but that is a more complicated topic And you're absolutely right. That should have been discussed a little more.
And I'm okay. I'm okay with it not being discussed. The point that for people who sat and watched the debate and said, "Oh, this is a waste of time," I want to say to those people that it wasn't. Right? Like even
no, it wasn't.
Even when I'm coming here today to say the debate was uninspiring and there was very little charisma. And while I could see there was an effort on, you know, to bring policy and ideas to the table, it doesn't seem like these third parties understand the importance of engaging the populace with your ideas, how to galvanize people around a vision, how to drive that vision forward. That's something I garnered just from watching the debate, as uninspiring as it is. And I want the audience to understand that some of these things may, you know, they're going to seem boring on the surface, but there's really a lot that we could get out of it if we see the value of the experience.
Yes, agreed completely. Yeah. So we're trying to improve and work towards that, but we got to sell it to the behavior that's there.
Right.
All right. And it gives you an idea of what you're going to get from the parties. Now, the party has to pitch their plan a little better. I guess they're going to see that, and hopefully they're going to tweak it. And they're going to have a little more time between the second and the third debate to do that.
Now, I got a question for the moderators. Why y'all have all these big, wordy, lengthy questions? It's almost like y'all trying to set them up.
We shortened the questions after the first debate, actually. We put in bold the actual shorter version that we're going to ask them. They had scripted questions that had a paragraph long question, but for the actual production value, and after hearing all the comments from the first debate, we shortened our questions. But listen, we didn't have control over the spontaneous questions per se, the ones that came out of Grand Bahama, et cetera. And so they may have seemed a bit longer. But what we did was we repeated the question for the debaters so they could digest it. But that's something we're still working on. We understand for production value, for a live TV audience, you don't want a paragraph long question. Yeah. You get lost in the question, you know? So yeah, that's something from the first debate.
All right, now, I guess another technical question, right? It's something that hit me. And Cecil, get your questions ready. When I'm watching the debate now, and I, in defense of the debaters, right? Mm-hmm. In the defense of debaters, for a moment there, it felt like you and Nahajah Black were prodding them to go into waters that they weren't necessarily prepared for. To what extent does the moderator, right, change the shape of the debate? And what responsibility does the moderator have to the debaters and to the entire sort of platform?
The main role of the moderator outside of asking the questions is to make sure everyone stays in their lane as it relates to adherence to the guidelines, the rules that were sent to them.
Okay.
So, and then outside of that, engaging in fact-checking to make sure that we don't have fallacious, erroneous information being perpetuated by the debaters. The referees and the judges for the debate, in a sense. I mean, we don't declare who a winner is. That's up to the public, really.
Right.
But we are making sure that the rules are followed, the time is kept, that they don't go over the time limit, and to make sure that they aren't espousing ideas that aren't true.
Right. So I'm gonna give you the two examples that popped up for me last night. There was a point where they were in a rebuttal period, and they'd been going, as they were sort of going back and forth, a number of debaters were sort of rebutting what the PLP debater had said. And at one point, Nahajah sort of prodded Evans to respond. And I wondered if it was mandatory for Evans to respond. Because my advice, like if I was in Evans's corner, I was going to tell her, don't say nothing. Be the FNM in that moment, right? And then for you, there was one point where you used the word attacks when referencing rebuttals that address statements made by a particular debater. It's on the sideline saying, but you didn't tell me I needed my popcorn. Like you didn't tell me it was going to be this spicy.
That's an interesting way of putting it. Let me just clarify what we are doing. So one of the rules that we sort of clarified in this round of debates, the second one, was that if you are attacked, and I am using the word attack, when I say attack, I mean if a debater is being targeted by another debater on a particular point, right? Mm-hmm. We said in our rebuttal rules that we will always allow the person that is the target of the other debater to actually address that. I feel like that is only fair. If someone is questioning or challenging a point that you've made in your earlier contribution, you should have the right to defend yourself. And that is why we did that, so that, and as you could see, the dynamics of this debate, it's been a pattern over the first two, and I imagine this is going to continue through the third and the fourth. Because the PLP is the only established party with a record, and because the FNM has chosen not to attend the debates, they are going to get most of the criticism, most of the targets from the other parties. Mm-hmm. So we have to allow Ms. Evans, in this instance, and the last debate, Mr. Smith, to respond to the accusations or the statements that are being made and targeted towards them. So that's really where Nahaja and I, where we were making sure that there was equal opportunity for them to defend their record against the rebuttals that are being made and targeted towards them.
No, man. Okay, absolutely. See, that makes sense now that you put it into context. Because initially I felt like maybe y'all were putting Evans in waters that she wasn't prepared for. But so now it feels like you're reminding her that, look, you do have a space to respond. Nobody's going to prevent you from engaging that.
And I will just add, let me just add, had it been another person that had been the target of another debater, we would have done the same for them.
Right.
But it seems to be a pattern that, because again, it's a function of both the PLP having an established record, the only debate team that has actually been the government, and in the absence of the FNM being there, that is what has happened.
Now, I got a lot of texts here. CA, you have any questions?
I just want to commend Dr. Chris Curry. This debate proves that University of the Bahamas is competent and that they can be put juxtaposed to any university of the in the Caribbean, in the region, and of course the world. I was concerned about that when the FNM administration decided not to participate. Mm-hmm. I questioned University of the Bahamas' capability of even hosting and conducting such. And when you watch the debate itself, it proves that, yes, the university is capable and apt. It proves that Verizon Media is apt and capable, and we can produce anything of quality. The quality of it, the pre-debate and the correspondence and the dialogue for the pre-debate, it's par excellence.
Yeah.
It can be compared to any place in the world.
Absolutely.
Right? And I am glad to see that. I am still concerned about the government's position of questioning that, because I'm not sure if they realize.
Yeah, no, that's just politics. They didn't even think about that properly.
Yeah, but see, the world watched. The world watched and the world saw. And the world started to question the competency of the University of the Bahamas, because every other university could do it. Yeah. But it seems as if, at first, that our university wasn't at that maturity to do such. So I'm glad to see that we are at that maturity, and I'm continue to trailblaze, and I commend you and the team, and I want to see more. And I am of the belief that debates are important, and I'll be speaking on that for more.
And Chris, you know what I would love to see? I was impressed by the pre-show engagement from the students in the focus group. I'd love to see a post-show, immediate post-show wrap-up on site with those students.
Yes.
We had students actually at the PAC. There was about seven of them handpicked because we couldn't have any real audience. Mm-hmm. We had one student in the PAC asking the very last question. She's actually a former student of mine. She just graduated. She actually got the President's Award, and she graduated with a BED. I'm talking about Seymour. But we would have liked to have more student input, but we really literally ran out of time, and production, as it was, couldn't allow for that. But that's something we're always mindful of, that, you know, students at UB, they're our most important clients. Mm-hmm. They're our constituent base. They're what makes the university the university. So that's why they were actually there. But again, production time wouldn't allow for us. You know, we had one small technical issue, and then we had a little bit of an overrun. I think the show ended around 10 after 10.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I watched the entire show. I thought it was me. I was at home talking about BPL, and I thought they cut the power to the mic. I thought it was my fault when the mic went down. But I was impressed by, because it was obvious that a number of the panelists were slightly nervous. And sometimes what that is they are aware of the awesomeness of the task ahead of them, right? It's not a critique or a testament to their inability, just that sometimes you have to stand in the fullness of the experience, and it can be overwhelming, right?
It's amazing, too, because I felt the same. Not saying I was nervous particularly, but I felt like, you know, here we are on a platform where the nation is watching. You know, it's a national event, and it's being broadcast live on TV and on Facebook for the entire world to see, really. And so there's an awesomeness attached to it. So, yeah, I think that actually is a good thing. That tells me that people understand the magnitude of the moment.
Mm-hmm. So let's go through some texts. I'd love you and Cecil to respond to the text. First text, Aaron, please let Chris know, job well done. The stage, the decoration, the music, the sound, the production was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And I think Cecil had sort of echoed that earlier. I really appreciate that. And I think the production was excellent.
Absolutely. This other text here, we don't know that on here. Good morning, Aaron. That wasn't a debate last night. That was a debacle of epic proportions. And I don't like how the PLP laid out the good doc to be slaughtered on policy issues. She looked like a fish out of water. It was a disaster. Well, I can be honest with you. I am also upset at the PLP for putting Melissa Evans out there like that, because you have a brilliant mind. Yes, Mr. Yuri?
I'm listening to see your point. I believe that she's the most capable and most apt. She led the PLP's platform about an alternative view of how to deal with this COVID. So she was best suited. Now, so they didn't left her out to dry. Yeah, she created the platform. Yeah, she was responsible for creating the PLP's response.
The COVID part.
The COVID part.
The climate part change.
Well, I don't think any of them were apt. I don't think,
right.
Mind you, our prime minister spoke on climate change, and I don't think that he was apt in speaking on behalf of the Bahamas, but he got the information and he regurgitated the information. Could have done the same.
That's the point I'm making.
If I could respond to that, two things. She was the ideal candidate for the PLP put forward. She is actually the co-chair of their task force for COVID-19, along with Dr. Michael Darville. She's their co-chair. She has a PhD in global health and a master's degree in epidemiology, right? Mm-hmm. So she was the right person. Now, here's the thing. You might say, she said a couple of times, I'm not experienced in this area, or I'm not an expert, I think was what she said. I wouldn't have said that per se, but that's a small minor offense. The way to measure a debater's success and ability is the degree to which they have to be fact-checked. And if I stand on my recollection from last night, she never had to be fact-checked once. Other debaters had to be fact-checked continuously.
I can be honest with you. Other debaters were just wiling out on the stage with the types of information that they were trying to bring to a debate. But my critique is slightly different. You're absolutely right. She is knowledgeable. But it's sort of like me. You got so much knowledge in your head, and there's a difficulty getting it all out in that two-minute window, right? The same thing I deal with every day on the show. And so that's where my critique sits, in the lack of preparation. You got a stellar player there, right? You got a stellar player there. You got to treat and handle her properly, right? I mean, the woman is brilliant. The woman is measured and has spatial awareness. But they could have prepared her. She could have done much better with information about climate change if it had been prepared. But more importantly, you have the potential of a great politician, someone who's not focused on the politics of it, right? Because they focus on the policy work. So how do you prepare them for the stage? And I think the PLP did her a disservice by not, you got a brilliant mind. Mm-hmm. Don't send her out to the slaughter, not in the sense embarrass herself, because she didn't. But prepare her properly.
Right. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. And don't forget my earlier comment. You know, in a way, the PLP has greater weight to put on their shoulders, uh-huh, because they're the one party that's going to be attacked in a way that the other debaters never have to worry about. Mm-hmm. So she has to be prepared for counterattacks and for responding to people that are going to target her.
Right.
That put an immense pressure on her in a way.
Saying
she didn't crumble under pressure. I think she handled herself adroitly and showed some degree of acumen with what she said. I think it was a little regrettable that she made those statements that she didn't have any experience or she wasn't an expert in a
particular field.
Honestly, all of the debaters last night showed that they really didn't have much experience in environmental issues.
But I can be honest, she did the best job by setting it out from the break, yes, right? Like, I'm not an expert.
However,
right? The other people sort of tried to lead us down that road and we discovered.
Yep.
But you know what? That moment, though, I think, I hope that the audience sees that these critiques, right, the observations that can be made, that if you change your perspective slightly, there's lots to be learned from this debate. And I hope third parties see the need to spend more time preparing candidates for engagement, right? Not just for the sake of, I'm not coming at it from the perspective of the sake of winning seats, but when you become an MP, you take on this responsibility and you need to be able to prepare those candidates for that. And the debate for me gave me an opportunity to see many things that were lacking. But I got some, Cecil, you got more to say? Because I got some more text.
And I just wanted to say that I think that these were some of the best debaters we had in the country. I pulled them juxtaposed to the number of PLP and FNM candidates, and these speakers were superior to them. And it says wonders about what we have to offer as a member of parliament who should not be there, can't read, cannot express themselves, cannot think out of a paper bag. Yes. And this is the reason that we need such platforms like debate, so we can understand who and what type of caliber of persons we are putting to represent us, right?
Yes.
And even though there were criticism about the debaters, right? I would like to say that the PLP won this debate, in my opinion, again. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to say that, in fact, the COI party expressed themselves and they had a good platform. They were able to show what their party was about. And also the Constitutional Party. So those two, I think, won the debate by having access to a larger audience to say, well, this is what my platform is about.
Yeah.
So they actually won the debate separate from the PLP, who had a better grasp and understanding of the topics.
Yeah, I think that the COI did a poor job in the second debate. Not that they did poorly, right? Like, not that Lincoln Bain went up there and was a fool or didn't make sense. That's not what it is. But I think they missed what it was. Mm-hmm. Putting your leader.
I like the hurricane plan. They have a hurricane plan. And clearly, I'm not comfortable with the government's hurricane plan. And I was entertained by the COI's hurricane plan. Even though aspect of it, I said, no, that can't work.
Yeah.
It's a plan I can entertain and hash out,
yeah,
in contrast to the government's plan currently, where I can say, Lord, if a hurricane come, we doomed.
Or domed.
Yes.
It's like you literally could be in a dome.
A dome floating, again, floating, yes, on the plywood, and knowing that can't last.
Just one moment. I need to speak to someone for a second.
Go ahead.
Dear Honorable Minister Desmond Bannister, Minister of Works, you're responsible for that too. Okay. It's hurricane season. I just want to throw that in there. Thank you, Dr. Curry, for that reminder. I still got a few more texts. Now, I want to say to my audience, I want to apologize that I can't get through to all of these texts. We had an issue with the phone, and by the time it got charged back up, 8,500 texts came through. So I will read as many as I can before I leave. The joke came from the texter. I don't think you understand how jokes work, texter, but thank you very much. Good day. He said people were asymptomatic. Oh, asymptotic instead of asymptomatic. Asymptotic is the curve in math class. If he's going to speak, at least he should have the... No.
Shit.
I can't say that on air, but thank you, Texter, for that lovely joke. He's just making fun of the fact that Minister Wells likes to use big words that he doesn't understand. And that is half of my critique, LO, I believe. The production was good. Content and moderators were awful. Dare text her. I don't think the moderators were awful. I just think it's new and it's difficult. Just like being a radio show host and trying to figure out how to balance the texts and the calls and the guests and the hosts and the guest co-hosts. Sometimes it just takes a little difficulty managing them all. Another day, the PLP wins, and we go through another cycle of mistakes, makeup, and same old bad behaviors of the past. The country cannot afford to go back there. I want people to realize that no matter who we vote in, we're going right back there. If you vote the PLP in, you vote the FNM back in, you vote new parties in, no matter who we vote in, we're going right back to that point you fear until we, the voters, change our behavior, and through our behavior, force politicians to behave differently. Anyway, I am all out of time. It's been a wonderful wrap-up debate show. Just like democracy, you can't get everything done in 1 hour, and that's good because we still got plenty living to do. I want to say thank you, Dr. Curry.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Please, as soon as possible, give us the dates for the third debate so we could set up the show with free snacks.
Free snacks.
Cecil, tell the people that there were snacks.
You need to see these plums. These are huge.
They are huge red Spanish plums, and I risk my freedom and safety picking them.
I didn't know Spanish has plums.
From the boat, because somebody went in the tree and picked them, and I just bought them. But they're free for you today, Cecil. Anyway, thank you for joining me. Thank you to my producer, Arlington. This morning, it's been a great day. It is now time for Unleashed with Levon Miller. We're out of here, people.